No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS.
You're with George Eliason,
live from Donbas, Ukraine, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm your host, George Eliason. Welcome back. Well, today in the news from Donetsk is really horrible news. Ukraine fired a Tochka-U missile at the Kramatorsk train station this morning, where thousands of evacuees were trying to get out of the city. Kramatorsk is a city that's been under Ukrainian control for the past 8 years. And now they're firing on those people. It's unknown how many dead and injured, but women and children are among the dead right now, the victims. Why is Ukraine allowed to do this, and why isn't this in the media? This monster bomb missile. So when it crashed, it wasn't just the initial explosion. It threw the hundreds of small bombs across the area in a large radius. And people well away from the actual missile strike were killed. Ukraine has been using these tactics and using these tactics since 2014. This is what they've been doing in Donbas, and now they're spreading this across the rest of Ukraine. Pushed out of that city. If they thought for a second that that city would stay with them voluntarily, why would they do this? And very simple. They don't look at them as people. They're subhuman, less than people, because they're Russian. They're Donbas people. And until all this started, there was no way they could get away with doing a mass killing like this. Now, as a journalist, as journalists, we need to do everything we can do to break the evidence into what social consciousness, I guess. People are suffering across Ukraine right now, and it's far away from the contact line where the actual war is going on as possible. They're torturing people in Lviv because they're not Ukrainian enough. Anton Gerashenko at Bucha said they needed to go across Ukraine for people that have pro-Russian attitudes. Well, what's a pro-Russian attitude? If you don't like having right sector or Azov or Idar or any of these Nazi groups, these are nationalists. And, you know, let's be very, very clear. When I say Nazi, I'm using a short form. Nationalists, and they only recognize people that see them as the hope of Ukraine. Their politics are 1930s, 1940s. And their attitudes toward their people are the same attitudes their grandfathers displayed during World War II. Most of Ukraine at that time was under Soviet control, and everybody across Ukraine suffered because they were not Ukrainian nationalists, and they just killed them wholesale, torture, whatever. To get into Ukraine's information war in a little bit, but we really need to look at what's behind this attitude. How long has it been going on? Now, in 2014, one of the leaders of Maidan, and he was leader of the group Uno Unzo. Uno Unzo has a history of extreme nationalism going back to the 1980s. Dmitry Kuczynski said on TV Channel 12, this is Ukrainian news, during an interview in 2014, that they needed to fill camps with not only unreliable citizens of Ukraine who had the audacity to feel Russian, but also the inhabitants of the rebellious republics of Donbas. If Ukraine cannot have a military solution to regain the rogue territories, it must create for them uninhabitable conditions. When the Ukrainian army is pulling out of areas or being pushed out, before they go, they're shutting off the electricity to the mines across the area. And right now, this affects at least five cities. Well, you say, so what? The mines are filling up with water, which means they're also filling up with methane gas. And you close down a mine, it's entirely different. You keep it dry, the pumps are always active. The methane gas is released, it's pumped out, and it's either burned or released into the atmosphere. Very, very measured way. The mines themselves go underneath the cities that they're next to. And you think of it as a city under a city. That's how big these mines are. And they're allowed to flood. They poison all the drinking water in the entire region that they're in. So with just that fact, these cities would be, there's no drinking water. Everything growing is poison that takes from the groundwater, or if it's fed from a well. People living in those cities would have no real access to water anymore. To compound that, the methane builds in such volume, and methane itself is so flammable that even static electricity can set it off. Now, imagine living in a city knowing that there's this giant methane bomb underneath it. And if it explodes near or underneath your apartment, it's going to take the entire neighborhood down. This is what is termed as a war crime. It's intentionally putting cities in unlivable conditions so that people there will need to move out. It's forced relocation. And if the people won't relocate, they're in a position where at any moment, after a short period of time, at any moment, anything could set off their doom. What kind of country does this to their own people? What kind of leader? Zelensky. Now, Volodymyr Zelensky went to the UN and he got Russia kicked off the Human Rights Council. And this is an outrage. And as Patrick Hennison said at the top of the hour, there hasn't been investigation one yet. All the evidence in Bucha points to Ukrainian source of the incident of the massacre there. And we're looking at over 300 people dead. Now, as an investigative journalist, you really strive to keep things neutral in what you write, even though the evidence is going one way. The New York Times and a lot of the major MSM news sites have put up satellite photos showing a mass of dead people on the street earlier. And that was 3 weeks earlier. Now, within the last couple of days, a phone call was intercepted by the Azov commander in Bucha, who okayed his soldier shooting someone just because they didn't have an armband. in the conversation he was having, he actually berated the other person because the bodies were moving and getting up before the camera went by. This could very well be what made up that satellite photo a staged event. And if you look at the image itself, the one thing that strikes me, and you have to understand, I've lived in a war zone for 8 years. So I have a little experience looking at these images. But the image itself from the satellite shows bodies that look at first way too symmetrical in their placement. If you're looking at it from either side of the street, the bodies actually line up right, left, right, left, right, left, and so on. There's no clusters of people. No one's walking together or talking together, which is in a Ukrainian neighborhood, and I don't care where it is, which side of the country, very, very uncommon. Ukrainians are very, very friendly people, especially with their neighbors. So not seeing groups of people walking together that were talking, it's funny. The other thing is, if you look at how the bodies are laid out, they're this strikes me as wrong. So start there. Bucha had access to the internet and telephones all that time. From the time that satellite went over, right through the time that this, no one reported dead people in the street. Not like that. No one reported the massacre happening. John Gerachenko said what he said afterwards, that Ukrainians have to turn in anybody that looks like they have the audacity to feel Russian, or they took food packages from the Russian army, or they speak Russian across Ukraine. We need to turn them in. They're guilty. What are they guilty of? Saw a short video last night, and honestly, for me, it's heartbreaking because I understand the scene very well from living here. You have a lot of very old people in their 80s and 90s, and when you look back at World War II, we're looking at about 80 years. So they were either born during the war or just afterwards. This old woman, maybe 40, soldiers on the street, and she actually came out with a Soviet flag. Now, I'm not a socialist. I'm an American conservative. Okay, but flags aside, comes out in the street, and she's waving a red flag. Ukrainian soldiers walk up to her, and they hand her two cans of food, which she takes. At first, she says, "No, boys. That's for you. You need that more than me. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad Russia's here." Well, that was a big mistake because these were Ukrainian soldiers. And they looked at her and they said, "Here, let me hold that flag for you." And she said, "Okay." And she was really happy. She said, "My parents gave me this flag." Her parents would have fought in World War II, allied with the United Kingdom, allied with America. So we need to look at these people that way because that's where their sentiments lie. They hated the Nazis, and the Nazis tortured them. And this little tiny woman grew up with stories of her aunts and uncles dying or being tortured. And it was her aunts and uncles, not her grandparents. They took the flag from her, threw it on the ground, and started stepping on it and squishing it into the mud. I looked at her and I said, "Say Slava Ukraina," which her memory and in reality is like saying Heil Hitler. It was the Bandera way of saying Heil Hitler. So when you hear Slava Ukraina, Hail Ukraine, it's no different than Heil Hitler or Hail Hitler. The reality, and that's in this woman's mind. So what does she do? She takes the two cans of food that they gave her. She puts them back in his bag. She puts the bag down next to him. And she said, "That's my parents' flag. I want it back." And then they cut the video off. Now, growing up in Ukraine, growing up here for 2014, and these people grew up in this culture. Now, we're not talking about socialism. Ukraine broke away from the Soviet Union, which disintegrated it, which, okay, that's history. Nobody at that point, I shouldn't say nobody, very few people wanted socialism. They wanted liberalism. Well, what happened? Well, this is what it brought back to them. Political views that killed their parents, that killed people that this old woman may have known, or that her parents did, is back on her doorstep again. It reminds me of another story from 2014. It was in Donbass. It was an old woman. She was in her 90s and had lived in the war and remembered it. And she was at a train station, and someone I know worked there, and they were talking to her because she looked a little lost. And things had already started. Maidan had already happened. The war's already started. And the woman was crying. And friend asked, "What's the matter?" She said, "I can't get home." "Well, where do you live?" "Well, I live in West Ukraine." And she started really bawling. And she said, "I'm a Bandera." Old woman understood the situation in Donbass and how she would be, you know, her view of how she should be reacted to just because of the location that she grew up in and lived with. Now, keep in mind that she's not from Donbass. She's from West Ukraine. Friend said, "How are you a Bandera?" West Ukraine, and during the war, I remember the war. I can never forget. It still keeps me up at night. Bandera came into our household and did that my mother cooked for them. And then they went over to my neighbor's household and they made us go over there. And neighbor had a little baby and they had the baby on the table and they cut it up. It literally quartered the baby. It's the politic of Bandera. You see, even in West Ukraine, the population of nationalists isn't broad-based as people lead other people to believe. West Ukraine had this forced on them, and it was done by political leadership that wanted power more than they loved their own people or cared about their own people or represented their own people. Supporting this right now in Ukraine is just so dangerous for everybody. because as long as you're supporting an Azov group, well, they're coming into your country. They're immigrating there. They're not going to be content being citizens of a liberal democracy. And liberal democracy is democracy with a big D. You have political parties. You have freedom of speech. You have representation. You have all. Will have freedom. For any type of nationalist, real nationalist, not the social media nationalists who confuse patriotism and nationalism, you don't have freedom of speech. You don't have rights. You have a couple of political parties, but if you go against what the political leader says, you go to jail or they kill you. It's just the way it is. That's the reality. Like that kind of structured life, not because they like the restrictions, but because they were soldiers in it, it means they're the boss of somebody else. Always the average Joe, the normal human being, the citizen that's not involved in government, every one of those people are underneath the smallest one of these people. So they can walk up to you, walk into your house, steal everything, do whatever they want to you and your family, and they're not going to get in. What I've told you about Ukraine, the nationalists control the police and security apparatus there, the police force, etc. You have no one to contact to complain to. Try taking it to court. Can't be done. So you can't do it in media because the people that tried ended up on hit lists and they were killed right away. Well, that sends a message to journalists when you're in that type of situation. And most journalists, so-called, well, they're in it to make a name for themselves. They're in it the social media attention. I mean, a Facebook-like, for God's sakes. And to make a living. And they're professionals in the sense that this is my job. So to keep their job, they're willing to play by all those rules and ignore everything in front of them. Journalism inside Ukraine right now and outside, the United States has just bulked up on this, are political activists. They've been gravitated into these positions growing up. The reason is it set up a measure of control that wouldn't otherwise be attainable. Imagine doing a massacre like Kramatorsk is now, type of missile. Very, very dangerous and very, very deadly. And many, many people right now are dead. And nobody outside of Russia and Donbass going to publish it. Press on these words. You're hearing about it here. Did you hear about it before here? Many times will you hear about it after? Now we're going break right now, and we'll take this up right afterwards. This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason.
TNT Radio's Hervoy Morich.
Basically, there was this corporate has the view that Russia, China, Putin are all with the globalists by hook or by crook, and then Matthew Arendt has more the position, as well as Flores, that China and Russia are punching back against the Western globalist establishment. Well, have you thought about this? Is Putin secretly a Davos disciple, or is he sticking it to the NWO? Yeah, I tend to favor the view that there's a little more disagreement in the world than ultimate collusion. So, you know, I think at that level, there has to be a degree of playing along. I don't read a whole lot necessarily into the fact that was a tenuous connection with being a young global leader. But then Klaus turns around and says, you know, basically excommunicates Putin.
Hrvoje Morić on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Forget your mobile and what's the worst thing that can happen? You have to find the last payphone in Britain. Forget Valentine's Day, tricky one, but nothing a little charm couldn't solve. Forget that the dishwasher actually works a lot better if you turn it on and it's a few excuses about dodgy wiring. Forget to check the batteries in your smoke alarm, and maybe one night poisonous smoke fumes from a fire will drift silently upstairs and suffocate you or your family. Remember, test them every week. Push the button, not your luck.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm your host, George Eliason. Welcome back. Now, in 2014, Dmitry Korchinsky, in a TV interview, also said, "Our teachers of democracy, the Americans, during World War II, saved the democratic system, but created concentration camps for its citizens of Japanese descent because of the war with Japan. They bombed residential neighborhoods in Germany in order to demoralize the German soldiers. On the front line and in the occupied territories, we must act according to the American way." That's where he said, if we cannot return the territory, it must become uninhabitable. If we can't have it, nobody can. By there, seeding the cities with cluster bombs, why they're poisoning the cities and setting them up for methane explosions. Trying to clear us out either by getting people to leave as evacuees or by burying them. They're applying what they call the Croatian scenario, where NATO bombed the Serbians until they left. And some of the Ukrainians from Unuunzo were part of the KLA effort, genocide against the Serbians. They went from town to town and village to village, torturing and killing people. And some of Ukraine's leaders from Maidan, like Arseniy Yatsenyuk, were there. Yatsenyuk himself was there as a torturer. Leaders of Pravi Sector were there as terrorists. Unuunzo and Dmitry Korchinsky were there, going village to village and town to town, killing civilians, and they enjoyed it. Why? Because civilians have no way to fight back. It's hunting humans. And the humans are basically in a cage because once these groups are there, there's nowhere to go. There's no way to get out anymore. The great hope of everybody in a situation like that, as the war's coming to you, is that it'll pass by. Many of the people that stay in that situation, and it's very, very sad. They're normal people. They work for a living. They don't have much money. Where are they going to go? They go. They'll have to be able to eat, work, and the only place that they know for sure they can do that is where they are now. It makes for a very, very tragic situation. In Donbas, Ukraine was targeting all the elementary schools, all the high schools. Effort, according to Poroshenko at the time, was very, it's a very simple logic. If there are no schools, parents with children have to leave that town. Think about that. The parents take their children so they can go to school somewhere else, okay? And then the town dies, it withers, which happens very, very quickly. The reason for that is that there are no kids, there are no people parental age, and who does it leave? Pensioners. Just the pensioners. So you end up with an average demographic in a village or a town where people are over 60. And the Ukrainians are counting on the fact that nobody actually cares about people. That's what they're trying to set up. Now, with Ukraine's actions, starting with Bucha, moving to the UN Human Rights Council, and then picking up campaigns, sending missiles to train stations where evacuees are trying to leave the war zone, is to specifically cause Russia to start occupying areas and clean them out and set up policing and make sure that the Ukrainian nationalists aren't killing people. The reason for this is the Russian army will have to spread out thinly. Now think about that for a second. In terms of a military strategy, it's not a bad one, because Russia can't be everywhere. So if you have battalions of soldiers and they have to be spread across, we'll say 10 cities, well, how big's a city? Well, if you're looking at 600,000 to a million people, even 10,000 soldiers, it really isn't that much, is it? Not in terms of stopping saboteurs from blowing things up, or coming in and gunning down children, or sending missiles into the city. Now, if you look at the size of Ukraine, it's about the size of Texas, or was before the Donbas republics broke off. How many soldiers would Russia need to do that? So Ukraine is actively trying to provoke this. If they get Russia to do that, from my perspective, having lived here, I would expect a lot more terrorism on the Russian side of the border, just because the personnel is getting spread out so much. Russia needs to figure out a strategy, and you know it's probably in the works now, being implemented. Been a great cost to them in terms of lives so far. Because they've gone so far out of their way to protect life, okay, Ukrainian lives, property, they're taking a lot of casualties in terms of wounded and dead for their trouble. So one way or the other, it has to be able to pick up a little bit, the pace. of the war. They need to be able to observe that these militants in a much stronger fashion. How are they going to do that? It's above my pay grade. I don't even pretend to know. The balance here is just god-awful. It's a knife edge in terms of, you know, the actions that they take. Ukraine is doing things. Ukraine is harming their own citizens willfully, Russia. And once they took Russia off the Human Rights Council, Ukraine sees a window where they can get away with this wholesale. Crazy. It's absolutely crazy. Why is Joe Biden doing this? How far will they go? And will this develop into World War III? And I brought this up a couple times because every time Europe sanctions, and now they're saying, okay, we're not buying Russian gas, we're not buying Russian products. On that end of it, they're hurting their own citizens because Russia has other markets. But they're cutting a European country out of Europe. Russia is in Europe and Asia, and it's very distinctive that way because of the geography as well as the politics to support a PR company, an information operations company behind Ukraine right now. Scott Ritter made such a great point in his discussion of Zelensky. When he described Zelensky as a nobody up until January, 3 months ago, no one cared about him. 4 months ago, everybody just thought he was just little listening to. 6 months ago, Joe Biden was patting him on the head and telling him to be quiet. That's how much actual respect they have for this guy. And now he's leading the world. He is. And he's leading. He's by the nose, like the UK, European countries, and even Australia, America, on what they think and what they should believe. All the intelligence that Western countries are getting is coming out of either PR agencies, communication professionals, SBU. And the SBU is filled with Azov and Pravi sector. How much actual intelligence is being brought out? Is it just talking points that they need to, well, we need to make Russia look bad in this city, so we're going to say this or that? Well, that's exactly what's happening. What about all the mistakes that are being caught and all the misspeaking, which is a Ukrainian feature, and change? You'll see them admitting to all kinds of things as this goes on forward. He could literally walk up to, you know, 20 people, shoot them in the head on video, and it's not going to matter in the international community because they'll have strategic communications people build a narrative out, put it out into media. He saves 50,000 people and dispatches terrorists when all the people were guilty of going shopping or something. What do you think the people in Bucha were trying to do? They were just trying to live. To get away from the war zone. They've been under Ukrainian occupation. I say that, I mean nationalists, for 8 years. When Ukrainian nationalists, and back then, the main group in Kramatorsk was Pravi Sector. When they got there, they had to pacify the city. And they went after everybody that looked like they felt Russian or spoke Russian, which is normal for this side of the country, or maybe had a flag or went to a website that but would be considered pro-Russian news. Well, what's pro-Russian news? Anything reporting the actual events going on as they're going on is pro-Russian. The kind of era that we're in right now. As we go, I'm going to build that out, how it works. Of three different, very distinct agencies, part of the Ukrainian government, that are working this. Those agencies right now are tied to the U.S. Embassy and the State Department, and it's both direct and indirect. They're getting their marching orders and being told what they can and can't do through the U.S. State Department. Now, I described this before as until 2017 was the Board of Broadcasting Governors. The director running this whole show is back there today running this whole show now. Can you imagine, and think about it for a minute, the foreign policy of every Western country you can think of by a contractor. The goal for he himself is to win. That's all he cares about. It doesn't matter to him how many lives are lost, and that's not just Ukraine. That could be American. He did the same program in Syria. He was running it both consecutively, and it was the Ukrainian info ops people that were actually responsible for what was getting. How can we accept this? Societies today, your freedom of speech depends on the will of this guy who's taking it away from every country that he deals with. An information war isn't geared toward Russia at all. They really don't care about Russia. The actual attitude is, well, let the Russians talk among themselves. Who cares? Part of their communications a few years ago. Let them talk among themselves. Who's listening? No one speaks the language anyway. When they captured the American market across the world, everything that you hear, everything that you watch, everything that you read, the goal is to so flood the media world, the media sphere, that once you hear 20 stations say the same thing, well, it must be the truth. This goes beyond propaganda. People like to say, well, this is what that is. And it's just psychological conditioning involved in information operations is the ability to go into a country that's very peaceful, are very, very friendly, where everybody gets along, tear it up like they did in Ukraine, and to be able to cement that into the culture in a few years. Think about that for a minute. And Ukrainian culture places an emphasis on education. The top universities in the world. Gian research, right up there among the best. In Donetsk today, in a city where the university was defunded internationally, their international university, DONTU, the technology department, competed against the world's best a few years ago. They competed against a university in Massachusetts called MIT. And guess what? They came in. Our department had been defunded for 3 years, but they were still teaching kids. They couldn't get students anymore, which raised the local admissions up. That's a good thing locally. It helps out, and it'll pan out for the economy later. But a university in a war zone that's being shelled, rockets are flying into the city, missiles are flying into the city, and is trying to blow up chlorine tanks at the edge of the city. They're trying to strike a nuclear waste site that's on the edge of the city and just cripple it, but make it unlivable. And university life is still so structured and strong that they're able to get these results anyway in international competition. That'll give you an idea of how developed the educational system is. Same way across Ukraine. To people, 2014, Donetsk and Lugansk were in peace with Kiev after Maidan. All we want is representation. Okay. They wanted to restructure the country and make it a republic. And that was hell no. 2015, Minsk was forced on Ukraine because the republics, and it was both republics, destroyed the Ukrainian army for the most part. Ukraine signed that peace agreement with the sole intent of trying to build up its armies so it could come back and do what it's doing today. 2022. This isn't 1920 or 1930 or 1940. Of being more enlightened, but we should be able to be more informed about what's going on in the world. And what I'm saying isn't, it isn't support Russia, or it isn't even support Donbas. It's take a look at the facts, and the facts themselves, the evidence itself, the real stuff, will lead to real conclusions. Exactly what's important when they're not. Critical thinking is the one thing they're trying to make everybody give up across the world. They're trying to make sure everybody is spoon-fed information. The ability to think critically, to look at something and say, wait a minute, that's not right. What are the facts? Or something is going to be lost if they put information operations. Take away your right to speak. They take away your right to think, your ability to think. And if you look at the political situation in the United States, front and center, that's what happened. Try to put up evidence about anything to a Democratic party member. I've been told you have to trust MSM and not get your news anywhere else. You have to trust the party leaders and not believe anything. It doesn't matter if a verdict comes out of a court or not. It's fake news. And if something might contradict what either the political party or the mainstream media, which is tied into the political parties now, are saying, it's fake news. If all the evidence is coming from the opposing source, the source that's saying they're not doing anything, they're doing good in the world, and it shows that they're actually doing the harm, that's fake news. As human beings, how do we go forward with this? Critical thinking is one area of life that we need to protect as just people. And we need to call people on the fact that maybe they're not using those facilities. They're not taking the time to look at evidence. I find it very, very frustrating to talk to some people, and even people I care about. And these are people that all of a sudden in 2022, who'd never thought about or cared about a Ukrainian or what's going on in Ukraine or Donbass or Russia until this war started, all of a sudden they became experts on the war in Ukraine because Joe Biden said this, Congress said this, so it must be true. Mainstream media is saying this, though there's no facts behind it. And even though experts from the agencies are coming out saying that, well, Ukraine has a stellar information operations team, the information war is going great for them. The only thing going great for them, it's too bad that they lie a lot, but that's just part of the information war. If they're providing all the news, what's the news now? This is only what helps them achieve their objectives. And quite frankly, put yourself in their situation. You don't actually have to win the war. You can enlist, you can conscript in areas across your country that you don't like and send them to the front lines. That thought crossed your mind. Because Pravi Sektor and Azov are the security apparatus, they've been making their lists and checking them twice. To find out who's nationalist or nice. Nice goes to the front line. Nice doesn't get any training either. It's what's going on in Ukraine right now. So we need to really, really use our minds, not our hearts, when we see things. And if you're going to feel for people, make sure they're the actual victims of what's happening. Now, we're going to be going to the news in a minute. I want to close with this thought. If Zelensky or nothing, where does that leave you? This is George Eliason, and we're heading into the news right now. Thank you for listening to TNT Talk Radio, and I'll see you next time.